Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Breakthrough Directions. Each week, Breakthrough Directions explores the two faces of your business, outward through marketing and client delivery, and inward, your vision, profit model, systems, team, and you, so you can grow a business you love and live the life of your dreams. Welcome to the show.
Well, hello, everyone. I'm Linda Feinholz, your host for Breakthrough Directions Radio Show, calling in as I do every Tuesday at noon Eastern, 9 Pacific, from here in sunny Los Angeles. And I have such a delight to be sharing the show with all of you today. It's actually my birthday. And one of the things that I love doing on my birthday is pausing and stepping back and thinking about the theme I want for my coming year. And as I was getting acquainted with the guest that I'm bringing you today, I realized for me it's a perfect guest to have on the show today because it's a conversation that I find profoundly important in life, and I can't think of anybody better than Rosalind Kahn to bring to us to have this discussion about who it is we want to be in life, how we want to shape our lives, and so on. You're going to learn more about Rosalind, about her book, and about her focus on bringing more kindness into the world that we live and that we create around ourselves. And Rosalind, welcome to the show.
Oh, first and foremost, I want to wish you a very, very happy birthday, my friend. This is awesome. I'm glad I could be your birthday present. Woohoo, woohoo.
Exactly. It's like, what a cool birthday. So you and I have talked about all the various things that you do in life, and before we dive in deep on the emotional side, I would love to share with our listeners exactly what it is that you do with what I like to call your weekday daylight hours, because you spend a tremendous amount of your life actually educating and shaping people professionally.
Yes, exactly. I'm a teacher in community colleges. I work at Santa Monica College. I work at Los Angeles City College. And I also teach at Belmont High School. And every day I go into my class, I inspire people to greatness simply by the most simple things. Like, for example, yesterday in my conversational English class, we were talking about people giving back and going to the the mosque and the other religious institutions. And one of the vocabulary words was gratitude. And I said, folks, write this down in your book. I want you to go ahead and write down every day three wonderful things that you're grateful for. And how do you think that'll make you feel? And I was, oh, my God, just saying those words and just sharing the wisdom, it was absolutely incredible. I was in an elevator with another gentleman, and he was bemoaning the fact of how upset he was in that he had to have a meeting with someone else that he really wasn't looking forward to it. And I said, don't bemoan the fact. You're human. You're alive. You got to take power over this situation because you're going to make it in this. By evening fall, it was the break of a Passover Seder that I joined, and the person I was sitting next to kept saying, I'm blind, I can't see. And I'm like, it's okay, I've got my glasses. I'm going to be there someday. I'll be there someday. Let me go ahead and help you. And, you know, this is a part of something that I do each and every day is trying to bring brightness and hope and see that there's a beautiful day outside that everyone can go ahead and appreciate, because we get so closed in our own mindset of, oh, my God, there's traffic. Oh, my God, I've got a million things to do. Oh, my gosh, what's going to happen next? Da-da-da-da-da-da. And there we have it.
And there's so, it's so easy, especially, let's be honest, living in Los Angeles, you know, we've come through this winter season where the rest of the country has had cycles of catastrophic weather as we look out at another sunny, warm, gorgeous day. And it becomes incredibly easy to settle into habit and not pause for a moment and look up and go, I'm actually incredibly grateful that this is what the weather looks like outside my window. I'm incredibly grateful that I have weather that allows me to go sit out in a backyard or go for a hike any day of the week, no matter what month of the year it is. You know, at the simplest level of staying aware of the I'll say, the breadth of our life situation as opposed to the minutiae of it. You know, as some people know, I had a catastrophic fall not too long ago. And as I was lying there, because years ago I had a catastrophic car accident, as I was lying there after the fall, I was able to say, this hurts like hell, and I'm okay because there's no broken bones. And by broken bones, I mean I was turned at the exact 5-degree angle that I didn't break my spine. And,
wow.
You know, it shouldn't have to be that extreme an event for us to pause and be grateful for a moment. I think part of how you operate and keep bringing this into conversation in so many arenas is so vital, because it's really offering people a way of reshaping and rewiring their thinking on a day-in, day-out basis to find, let's just say, the more normal things that we're allowed to be grateful for.
It's just really tragic that people have to take horrible, awful incidents to transform their lives. I was listening to Glenn Moschauer at an event with Ildana Fernandez, and he was going ahead and he was talking about Christopher Reeve. And
yep.
He said, you know, he'd been out horse riding and this was his favorite horse, and no one would have ever gone ahead and anticipated. And if there was all the money in the world and we could have gone ahead and done this, don't you think he would have wished it? But that wasn't the way that life planned. And yet all the rest of us have a equipped body that's got all the parts and the places and the pieces, and how often do we just appreciate that we're whole and that we're human and that we're alive? And so often it takes disasters to bring us back to the reality that we all inhabit and that we don't even acknowledge on a daily basis.
So true, so true. So now at the two college campuses and the high school campus that you teach at, what are the topics that you are having students signing up for? What are the classes that they think they're walking into?
Well, I teach two classes at the college. One of them is a class on public speaking that I absolutely love, and the other is a class that's on English as a second language. It's conversational English, and it is just so wonderful to teach these people who speak English as a second language, because their hearts and minds are just so open to learning. We had done this fun thing a week ago, and it just still brings a smile to my face. I love learning and taking it to the next level, and so they had a section that was on feng shui, and I just happened to read an article in the newspaper talking about the Rolls Hill Cemetery. So I come to class, and I'm like, guys, get out your phone. Get out your phone. Yes, these are ESL students. I want you to get out your phones, and I want you to find this article. Put in feng shui and cemetery. Let's see what we can find. And here we have these from around the world, and they're going ahead and, you know, I want you to find, oh, come on, okay, let me give you another piece of information. The author's name is this, and that's that, and the other. And by the end of the class, they all had the article on their phone or looking at someone else's phone, and they were just sitting there making sense of it all. And it's like, who would have ever thought, you know, in 5 years ago, don't get those phone on the desk. I don't want you going ahead and using them. And it was really a tool for learning and talking about, you know, what I teach is I bring everything that I can bring into the classroom. So there's a friend of mine whose name is PK Olo, and she's a feng shui expert. And she had sent me all these articles about that people think that with feng shui, you can go out and buy things. And so one of my students following up this week had an article that was these oils that you could buy, the fire, the window, the wind, and the air, and the water, and so on and so forth. And I say, you know, these are scams. These are really scams. You know, feng shui is really a science, and you've got to really understand it to make it happen. And so we use these tools as a way to bridge learning on a continual basis, that it's not just the book. It's what's out there going on and happening that keeps them learning. Just as in my public speaking, I was at a convention, a political convention, and I saw the mayor of Maryland, who was a phenomenal, phenomenal speaker. I'm like, guys, you got to go online, find this guy, 2012. He's absolutely amazing. And I even have my students who are tuning in today to go ahead and see how good old professor uses her voice to talk to the audience and what goes ahead and happens. And so every day is a classroom to me. Every single day, there's always something I can take back and share, and that's how I bring this random act of kindness and what I'm writing about with what I'm doing with my students in the classroom.
And it's really quite remarkable when I think about English as a second language. I remember so many years ago when it was, you know, how do we teach people how to say chair, table, list the various groceries you might have to figure out how to ask for in a store or how to order in a restaurant. Not quite what people were expecting was to be able to discuss feng shui.
Beauty of the book that they've gone and selected, we did everything from the tipping point of what is the tipping point to the overuse of technology to the current chapter. It's every chapter. We talk about microfinance. We talk about, you know, coming from a different culture and the language barriers, and it's just you need to know all this stuff to exist in life and to be successful. And I always say, it's not only what we learn in the book, but I push the horizon and I say, I want you to listen to TED Talks. I want you to go ahead and listen to NPR Radio, because these are the conversations that people have that life is all about. And so when you engage people in something that's fun, it really brings home what learning is all about, because it drives us to learn more and want to know, because it's the sake of knowledge and learning.
And it also creates this continual expansion of horizons for the people who are taking the classes, rather than a narrowing of the world to just how do you translate what's already familiar, but rather it's dual tracks. It's both learning the vocabulary, but also using that device in order to truly broaden their thinking about themselves and their world and so on. How did you come to be focusing this way in your teaching?
I don't like to be bored. And even though I've been teaching for 15 years, every semester I come in and I take a new angle and an avenue to learn. There's a study that I had done. It was a brief survey. I think it's viasurvey.org. And it looked at what my individual traits are that I score really high on them. And one of them is I have a love for knowledge and learning. I also have a great appreciation for beauty. And so if you ever come up and talk to me, ask me what kind of pictures I've taken on my phone, and there's beautiful pictures I've taken traffic on the freeway. Rather than sitting I look out. In my love for learning, I say, I want you to come up with a topic in my speech classes that I've never heard about. Yesterday in my class at LA City College, I had a guy who was talking about a person in history that's really, really famous, and he was going ahead and drawing relationships to current political events that we have today. And it was, and he said, and I also know that we have someone who's going ahead and talking about Augustus, that he's going to be, you know, taking the next level on this and really promoting that. I had another student who got up and gave a speech on Tesla. And at the end of Tesla's speech, she was going ahead and talking about there's technology out there in other parts of the world that they can actually control the weather. And she mentioned something called HART and this other technology. I learned so much from my students. I would never have known about fracking if it wasn't something my students had talked about in their class. And that's what keeps it exciting. I promote to my students, if we always learn what we've always learned before, then we always get what we've always gotten. And so you really need to push the envelope and explore new boundaries, new things of excitement. And that's what keeps it fun. There's a contest that they're having at Santa Monica College, and it's talking about poverty and security in the international world. And I had one of my students, and I said, I love your outside-the-box thinking. I think this would be an outstanding opportunity for you to really push the envelope on something we've never heard before. And helping them just expand their knowledge it just makes me feel so good inside that I'm opening up a new window of opportunity, and I'm helping create incredible human beings in the world.
Yeah, it's an amazing intersection between all of those elements as a teacher, as a mentor, as a guide, as an inviter to each of the people taking your classes into the new possibilities of who they can be, how they can see themselves and see this open road in front of them to actually develop interest, pursue interest. And in particular, I really love the fact that because you're on a college campus environment for so much of the time, is that it interlocks with other topics. It's not just oh, I got interested in, you know, in energy development. It's like, great, now go sign up for classes where you can take that interest even further through the sciences and so on. It's like this beautiful immediacy for them.
Oh, no, it's, you know, I bring in people from the Environmental Affairs Department. They have a program where they learn about the environment and the gardening, and you got to go ahead and do this. There's a lady in the Film Studies Department. She always brings in Sheila Waffe. She brings in incredible, incredible guests to her class on the world of film. There's a movie, it's I Am. Incredible, incredible people. And every time there's something out there, hey, you guys got to go do this. You guys got to go check this out. This is absolutely incredible. If you're connected to this one, there's another event you can go out to. There was a Skype deal where, you know, people don't know about what's going on and happening, the Skeptic Club. And I had sent some students out to that speech contest so they could go ahead and come back. And they're like, oh, my God, they were absolutely incredible. I've never seen somebody like that. And they were just high school kids. Wow, that's amazing. And, you know, life is made up of the experiences that you have. I wouldn't be where I was today if I hadn't been pushed as a youngster to go and do political work and stuff envelopes and, you know, go out and sell and be involved in, you know, different things in my community and volunteer work. And that's what I inspire my students to go out and do, to figure out their roadmaps of what they want to do and how they're going to complete the package for life.
And there's also another interesting element to this that I think is so important for all of our listeners to think about. In a sense, what you're creating is you're creating a model where you're teaching people in a particular setting to think about this idea of strategic alliances. You know, there's a lot of language out there about creating joint ventures and strategic alliances and so on. And yet, if I just take the model of how you construct your lesson plan, your lessons, your learning environment, you are continuously going out and saying, who is the expert at a particular topic? How do I bring them back in, integrate them into this conversation, expand the student's world because of the exposure to that expert, and yet you too are now in relationship with this continuously broadening pool of people who are experts in their area and creating this giant strategic alliance for expanding people's knowledge base, their sense of themselves and their possibilities and what they can create in the world. It's just really pretty darn miraculous.
No, it's really incredible. We had this incredible guest speaker who came to Santa Monica College. His name is Ken Bain, and he's How Teachers Can Teach Better. And I was so in awe of this man's presentation skills, and to have one of my students get up and she's giving a tribute speech on this particular person. I'm like, how did you hear about this? Oh, we read about him in our English class. I'm like, oh my God, I saw this guy speak, and I'm trying to get him on the TED stage, and it was like there. And then yesterday I had a student who gave a speech about Diane Kubler-Ross and death and dying, and I said to the class, you guys aren't going to believe this. The lady who was the editor of my book, Diane Schood, is the person who edited the book by Diane Kubler-Ross. I'm like, whoa, it's just like the world intersects on so many different venues. It's and you said it on the nose, life is about those relationships. I remember meeting you months ago at an event over in Pasadena by Craig
Boleen.
You know,
right.
The Craig that I'm talking about.
Yep.
Craig Boleen.
Yep.
And you and I had talked at that event there, and here we are, what is it, a year and a half, 2 years later, that
yep.
we're here on this radio show.
Yeah.
Things how
yeah.
the world works.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing. You know, you've made reference a couple of times to TED and TED Talks, and I would love to help our listeners understand the ways that you intersect with people who are wanting to take themselves, their ideas, into that venue, because it's something that some people are familiar with TED, some are not. And so let's share a bit about what that whole world is all about now.
Oh, my God. That is one of the highlights of my life. I got involved in TED by a gentleman by the name of Tom Lenzo, who's a person in the field of technology. And he and I have been talking over the years through American Society of Training and Development. And he calls me on the phone or sends me an email. And he said, there's this TED event. And when I was first exposed to it, TED stands for Technology, Entertainment, and Design. It's all about sharing great ideas. And what happens is when you go to a venue, there are a number of speakers and a number of videos that are talking about just literally amazing topics. From the first one that I went to, had a woman who was talking about self-defense and how you defend yourself. There was another woman talking about women in different parts of the world, talking about the environment, talking about pollution. There was an artist who had played some beautiful, beautiful music. There was a gentleman who was handicapped, but he was an incredible speaker, and he spoke from his heart, and I can still see his face. And I looked at those people and said, wow, I want to get involved. And so the first thing I would say to people is you can go on your computer right now and you can put in TEDx and you can find a TED event in almost any community, any place, anyhow. The second thing I would say is if you're a TED aficionado and you love TED, get involved as a volunteer. There are incredible opportunities on the day of the event. You can be one of the ushers that are standing there. You can be the person who's helping out on the food area. You can be a logistics person. When I got involved in the TED, which was the next year, I worked with the group for over a year planning what the theme was, how that philosophy was going to be worked out, what the overall plan was. There was a gentleman who was the head of the Pasadena 2.0. His name is Greg Apodeca, and I hold him from the bottom of my heart. He is an amazing man. I wouldn't be where I am today on this vision of being a speaker and writing this book if it wasn't for the help that I got from Greg. And so once again, it's talking about those relationships that we have and the people who intersect in our lives. And so by being in a volunteer capacity, you get to see what happens behind the scene and how it all comes together. And in that opportunity, there become other topics that come up. There's a TED organizer group, and there's a guy by the name of John Bates, and John Bates is someone who's been involved in TED for a long time. I recently got a Facebook note from him that he's going to be at the big TED event, and the big TED event costs thousands and thousands of dollars. I think it's out in Palm Springs, and they have different venues where they show this. And just going back a second, TED used to be something for the rich people in the world of, you know, the top of the top of the leagues. And now they've expanded. It's a complete volunteer organization, and there's certain rules and requirements that you have to do to become a TED event. You have to have a license. You have to have, so much information of so many videos, so many speakers, and there's a process and a procedure, and it's very, very linear. But they want to make sure that they keep the TED brand together. And so with that volunteer opportunity, people can learn about their particular interest, whether it be the film, the production, whether it be the promotion, the media, whether it be the logistics, the planning, or the setup or the technical side. And as I was saying about John Bates, he's a gentleman who does these TED boot camps. I went to one of his boot camps, and he trains people on their speaking skills and how to get to the next level. And it was through that opportunity that I met this lady named Kat Haber, who's out of Alaska. I think she puts the TEDx Women's Event in Vail, Colorado. And with that association, she connects me to a number of really high-level speakers that I was able to take my 15, 25 years of speaking and coach them to the next level of getting on the TED stage. And that's how I established that connection and the relationship. There's a lot of people that are in Toastmasters, and one of the things that John says is there's a process and a procedure of a Toastmasters presentation. It's a presentation. Just like me standing in the classroom, I'm teaching. Now, when you get on the TED stage, it's a completely different situation. You have to enlarge the gestures. You have to enhance the voice so that you can really capture the audience. And it's all in a, 5 minutes. They have particular time minutes. In the TED Talk that I was at, it was like a 5-minute speech, and the other person had a 15-minute speech. And so you have to get out the most important parts and streamline that process. So it is a really incredible process, and I would encourage anybody to go on to the TED webpage, and you can find out where a local event is. You can find out how to be a volunteer. You can absolutely go ahead and nominate someone to go ahead and to be a speaker. And I want to put another shout out to my friends at Santa Monica College. I recently gave a talk to the Honor Society through one of my students in my class, and when I finished the presentation, one of the people there, who's the secretary, her name is Yvette, said, "You are the most incredible speaker I've seen. We're doing a TED event here, and I'd like to make you a speaker at that event." And my mouth just dropped. I'm like, oh my, so that's an incredible thing. My second TED Talk, wow, that is absolutely amazing. And so once you, for me, I got exposed. It's just like I can't get enough. It's just like I want more and more and more and more. It's just you meet these amazing, amazing people, and you learn these incredible ideas. There's this young gentleman that I had mentored, Kane Milroy, who at the time was a 10-year-old boy, and he was talking about the pinball arcade that he'd made out of cardboard boxes, and he's like a national hero. There's a national amusement and a fun day that was in tribute to him. And as I was doing one of my recent talks or researching something, I found that he's out there for another. He's got a second TED talk, and I'm like, oh my God, this guy's incredible. So I'm following Kane. Kane's setting the path for me. And does that help you out?
I love it. You know, many years ago when I worked for Disney, Disney was among the very short list of invitees to the original TED conferences, and they used to take place alternately in Monterey, California, and in Japan. And, you know, these were events where at the time it was $6,000 per person to attend, and, you know, in the audience you would have Bill Gates and someone from a ballet company and someone who is working on some obscure little technology project, and then someone who was trying to figure out how to clean water. And what TED was doing was putting all of those minds in the room at the same time, and the structure was that you had exactly 18 minutes to share what you were passionate about, what was interesting, and through putting those people together and creating an environment where they could be exposed to ideas they would never think about, see people they'd never have the time or opportunity to meet, is create that amazing forum for the intersection of ideas. And what started to happen is those people then started relationships, took their ideas, created these little teams of that birthed ideas, and then spent the year trying to figure out how could we take this idea, take it into the design of it, the prototype of it, propose how to make a difference in the world with it, and so on. And just absolutely remarkable as a starting point. And in and of itself, that's what made TED remarkable. And then this whole second life it's had, which is taking it down to communities around the world, where at the TEDx level, it's anyone with a passion, with an idea, with a way of figuring out how you're going to offer it in your little moments in the limelight on stage, just creates this astounding domino effect of new relationships, relationships between people, relationships between ideas, relationships between opportunities to change people's way of thinking, of perceiving themselves, of the contribution we can individually make in the world, or the partnerships we can create with others to mutually pursue a passion and make a difference in the world. You know, there are so many people, you and I could probably list 20 different people who have given TED Talks that the idea they shared have now become turns a phrase that people are using in everyday conversation, because it was that great idea expressed. Just as you were saying, you really have to refine what you're sharing and how you're sharing it because of the limited time and the way you get to present. But what that means is you really consolidate an idea and figure out, how do I transfer this idea, this thinking, this aha, to some next person who's either watching it live or watching the recordings, which are in and of themselves, what an amazing opportunity to go through the recordings of all of those talks and just create a difference in the world.
Right. I'm just so grateful that you could give the background history and put it all together and give the perspective. Yeah. And that is amazing. You know, one of the people that I had trained was this lady named Eliana Giaj, who's from Israel. And she talks about the power of the voice. And as I was preparing for the show, I was taking one of the lessons that she had said on the stage in Colorado of just truly how to bring our self-center in whole. And she talks about the simple thing of saying the ah and just holding that as long as possible, of saying the sound of mmm. When we say mmm, when we really enjoy and appreciate something. And it's amazing how these people truly intersect our lives and make a huge, huge difference. I always like to say you never know by the words you say whose life that you can impact and change. Mm.
So true. So true.
Definitely.
I had a similar experience just a couple of weeks ago. I was invited by an amazing international association. It's called the Themed Entertainment Association, and its membership are the people who are the designers, the engineers, the companies that design everything from water fountains to theme park rides and attractions to museum spaces to spaces that might be in a retail environment or might be a museum environment or might be in a park environment or might be designing a building somewhere in the world, and bringing all these different minds together. And I posed a question to the room and got some feedback from someone that in among everything I had said for a 5-minute span, the thing that hit them the hardest was their inability to focus. And at the time we were talking about the challenges of being entrepreneurial and growing an entrepreneurial business. And he talked about the fact that as the head of his company, one of the things that endlessly frustrates him is his inability to focus on what he needs to focus on. And so I looked at the room at large and I could see people nodding their heads. And so I paused and I said, I'd like to discuss the topic of time blocking. Who here is familiar with it? And one hand in a room of 90 people went up. Now, not everybody's going to instantly react when you pose a question, but I posed the question, and what I saw was a huge percentage of the room shaking their head no, that they had never heard this term, time blocking. And so I asked permission of the room to go off agenda and talk in depth about time blocking. And I shared a variety of different ways that I teach clients to take ownership over their attention. And that one of the devices is literally owning your calendar rather than being owned by it. And ways of setting up time so that you spend 45 minutes uninterrupted and then the last 15 minutes of an hour you check your email, or you decide as an entire team, as I've had clients do, that because of the nature of our work, we must have focus time and we must have team collaboration time. And so I've had clients that decide we will agree no one is interrupting anyone between 10 and 1. Or a leader of a company that the company has valued having an open door policy, and to them what that meant was they should be interruptible anytime anyone has a question. And I teach them several different ways of thinking about that literally transforms their sense of ownership over their time, their attention, their productivity, their decision making as a business leader, their problem solving, and so on. What was so important to me was the number of people who came up to me at that event, thanked me for sharing time blocking, thanked me for sharing the idea of owning one's own attention. I've gotten emails from different people who each picked up on one of the techniques and said, we're trying that in our business. And it really spoke to that power that you've been referring to about how do we communicate in a way that shares an idea that someone else can integrate into their own life, expand their own possibilities, and it's all done with language, all of it.
No, it is. That is absolutely so beautiful, and I think to me that's one of the secrets of life and happiness. If you really take it down to the bare minimum. When we are authentic and we're true to ourselves, we're not acting, we're simply being. We see a person as a situation and we offer to help without anything, and the inspect and return And when that exchange occurs, it is just amazing. It reminds me of a situation of I've been working on my book, and my book is coming out, and I'm just so excited about this process. And there's a gentleman back in Minnesota, and his name is Chris Byrne. He owns a company called Jet Launch. And he and I were talking as I was putting this book together, and he always said, if there's ever anything I can do, let me help you out. If there's ever anything I can do. And, you know, as a new business person, I'm sure you've spoken to many business persons. There's always the things that you want, the things you can afford, and the things that you have to do. And as I was going ahead and talking, I got some feedback from a great photographer I had, Maureen Bonet, who did some beautiful pictures on the front of my book, and she sends me something, and she says, oh, the cover of your book just really needs some help, and you should contact this person. And I'm going down to San Diego, going down to Irvine, and I just don't have time. And I send something to my buddy Chris, and he looks at it, and he says, I'll do it for you. And when somebody goes out of their way to help me, I feel compelled to say from truly the bottom of my heart, Chris, I don't think I know a business person that I respect and admire as much as what you have done for me. And his response to me is, thank you for sharing that, because every time I talk to you, I always appreciate those words that you have to say. And it's just simply that exchange of information, of knowledge, of sharing one to the other that just really brings us to the next level. And to me, that's what life is all about, is going ahead and having these connections with people, because we never know when our time is. We never know when our time is, and you want to say each word as if it might be the last, which is one of those TED videos, the guy who's from the Boston Pops, who's really, really popular. You know who I'm talking about.
Sure do.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, I do, and my mind's blank at the moment as to his name.
It'll come to us in a bit. Yeah, but that's what it's all about. It's sharing that communication that we have of reaching each other on that level that brings us back to who we are. We're humans.
That's right.
We like to.
And there was a movie a number of years ago, and I know it's become a phrase that people use now about this notion of paying it forward. And I'm so appreciative of that movie. I'm so appreciative that phrase got created, because I watch the domino effect it has in so many different arenas with, you know, families, with children, with people in so many different settings. And it's one of the things I particularly love about your focus in your book, about this whole idea of how random acts of kindness are changing the world. Not could change the world, but literally are changing the world.
Oh, it is definitely so true. Just yesterday, in my class, a student shared this story, and it was about her going to the DMV. How many people out in the audience love going to the DMV? Isn't that your favorite place to go to? All right, tell me about it.
Yeah.
And so as she's standing there in line, she goes ahead and picks up her ticket, and she's like, oh, well, I guess this will be another couple hours. And as she settles down to her chair, and she's just sitting there, she has this lady come up, and this lady is just kind of stressing out and pulling out her hair, and she starts talking to her, and the lady goes ahead and says, oh, my God, I was in a car accident. My car got messed up, and I had to get it fixed, and I've got to be at work, and if I don't show up to work on time, they're going to go ahead and fire me. And she looks at the lady, and she says, you know, I'm not working today, and I've got a lot of stuff on my plate, but I want to give you my place in line. And the lady is so excited and so happy. It is just incredible. And so she gives the lady the place in line, and she's still on fire about it the next day. And people hear that story, and driving on the freeway, and there's a car trying to get over, I should let that car go in. You know, that person's going too fast. What can I go ahead and do to help them out? And it just really goes ahead and feeds it forward. There is one of my favorite stories from last semester was a student at, it was Thanksgiving, and she decided one day that she was going to go out and she was going to take some old clothes in the closet and clothe the people on the street. So she takes them out, and she goes ahead, and she gives them some old clothes. And then she decides, well, it's the holiday season. She's going to go ahead and cook some food. Goes home and cooks some food. She packages it up. She takes it out to the street, goes ahead, and she starts handing it out. She gets back home. She's kind of tired. Maybe I should lay down and take a nap. Says, no, there's something else I need to do. She goes on the Internet, and she's looking up a hospital because during the holiday there's a blood shortage. And despite her fear of needles, she goes off to the hospital, and she donates this blood. And that's how she celebrated Thanksgiving holiday. And you just sit there and you shudder. We all look at the newspaper every day, the jetliner that's down, the horrible things that's happening in Yugoslavia, the wars that are out there. And to me, when I hear these stories, I realize that there's another part of life. Where shall I put my energies? Where shall I put my focus? And that's why I say it's literally changing the world. Every time I get up and I give a speech, I turn it out to the audience. And I remember a speech I gave at a Kiwanis group, and thanks to all my friends at the Kiwanis who have allowed me to come out and speak to their organizations. It was in Granada Hills, and this lady stands up, and she was a survivor of the Holocaust. And she said she met this young lady, and this young lady was in some rather hard times. And being one who didn't have a house to live in, she'd invited this person in to stay in her house until she could get her feet back on the ground. And, you know, it just warms my heart. You could have heard a needle drop in that particular room when we went ahead and said that. And so one of the amazing things is with these stories of random acts of kindness, kind of vision of what I'd like to do with this random acts of kindness. And I really want to take it, and I want to help shape different communities. So I was talking with a different religious institution about six months ago in Calabasas, and, you know, they had some other plans. And so through a colleague of mine, Jeannie Dunphy at LA City College, had introduced me to the Presbyterian Church in Baldwin Park. And when he and I were talking, I said, I've got this idea of random acts of kindness. I'd seen an event at Our Lady of Grace that's here in Van Nuys. They had done a Pay It Forward Day or Love It Forward. In my book, I've got a list of 101 things that people can do to pass this on. And so I went to this event, and I decided I want to mirror this out in some other community. And so when I talked to this gentleman about he's a minister there, he wanted me to come out and help them celebrate. They have a children's festival that's really important to the Mexican culture. And one of the things before I got into teaching, I used to be involved in Spanish language media, a radio station called Radio Alegría 930, and I sold television for Univision, which is out of San Diego. Philip Wilkinson, Channel 19, and he's now in Los Angeles. But the world keeps just intersecting with one another.
Does.
But the story is, so I tell this guy that I have experience in Spanish language media, and he loves my idea of random acts of kindness. In his community, he's got all these kids that come, but they don't have the connection of the parents. So in the 26th of this month, I'm going to go out, and I'm going to give a speech. It's talking about tomorrow's leaders, talking about how random acts of kindness can be used to unify the children with their parents and bring this community to a whole. I wanted to take it to social media to share this message with the world, to share it in their Sunday and their ministry that they have. And then I want to go to the Interfaith Council and see if we can go ahead and take this as our way of here in the United States and Southern California, bringing these different religious groups and organizations together, as was done in evidence of, I think it was Temple Judea, has a program where they adopt a family. They adopt a family, And they help on the job search, and they help on the food and the schooling and so on and so forth. And I'd like to bring different religions together to go ahead and make this happen, possibly with the help of different organizations, different businesses in the community, because they're always looking at ways to go ahead and give back. Actually, I heard something recently from a colleague at LA City College who said Agape, the agape.com, has this really incredible program where they're encouraging people to go out to do random acts of kindness, and then they're supporting the people in their business process. And as I was on their webpage last night, they have this beautiful program called the Yellow Ribbon Program, which is about helping people who've been in prison and giving them a second chance. Every person who's listening to this radio has made a mistake. Where would you be if someone hadn't given you a chance to go ahead and make a second start? I just think it's wonderful the way these different businesses are intersecting. I know that my favorite place is Ben & Jerry's Ice Cream, where they go out and they give ice cream to people. There was another, I think it was Cold Stone Creamery, had a new place that they were opening up in Fashion Square Mall, and they were doing a fundraiser for cats, for, you know, cats who didn't have homes. And so that's kind of where I see my process of this random acts of kindness just going to the next level. And it's a dream come true to have written this book that shares these amazing, heartwarming stories. A person who's had a part of it comes away as a different person. There's a dear friend, her name is Sheila Morrison, and she was a senior of limited income. And when I started my book, and, you know, you're talking about the executives who don't have enough time, can't set their priorities and so forth, I said, I want to, you know, type up these stories. I want to make some corrections on them, make some changes on them. And out of the kindness of her heart, she offered to help me out. And so when we were at this networking group called JNet, she was able to say, stand up and say, I've been an editor for this fine lady over here, Rosalyn Kahn, and I've helped her on a number of people of an international basis and a background. And it was the most incredible thing, because it taught me to be a kinder and more giving person. And so when she called me on the phone and she said, I'm going to LinkedIn and I was hoping I could use you as a reference, I said, sure, why not? Called my person, his name is Lee Ryder, who's helping me on the, he's got an incredible business, solutionspress.com, that helps people write books. And he said, of course we'll go ahead and get that in. We'll be able to go ahead and change that in the next couple of days and get that up there and getting going. And it's all these people who've been involved in the process come away as changed individuals. And even in the audiences, there was an event I did at the Crystalis Foundation at the recommendation of Jan Perry, who works for the mayor. And when she heard about this random acts of kindness, she said, I think the city needs to hear more of these. And so I went down and I spoke to the people at the Crystalis Foundation. And I said, I walked in as a stranger and I left as a friend. Because I know when people make mistakes, they need a second chance. And I asked the people who are in the Crystalis Foundation, are you familiar with them?
I am. They're really remarkable.
Yeah, they take people who've been out on the streets, have problems with drugs and alcohol, are homeless, and they give them a second chance. And I pose the question to these people who lived out on the street, would you go ahead? And if you had a chance, would you do something? And I was amazed at what these people who live on the streets told me. There was a lady who went, her mother was in an assisted living place, and when she would go and visit her mother, there was also this other lady, and the only person who could communicate with this other person was this lady, the only one she would take food from. And it was her going in there and visiting her mother and giving to this other person that helped keep that person alive. And if that doesn't touch the soul, there's this other gentleman who said, I was out on the street and I saw this guy. He dropped his wallet and it was full of money. And I went over and I handed it back to him. And I said, you know what you could have done with that money? You could have bought a week's clothes, you could have got a hotel, you could have had a house. Why did you give it back? Because it was the right thing to do. And as I tell you that story, it's like my mind goes back to that incredible feeling, place and time. It doesn't matter how much money we have. It doesn't matter what neighborhood we live in, how rich, how poor. There is truly a heart in this world that brings people together. And that's why it gives me so much joy to have written this book that includes people like Martin Luther King, Steve Jobs, the Dalai Lama, and so many other people that have influenced us throughout time.
And it's truly creating a model for people understanding that it's all, you and I have been talking about this, it's all about, it starts with relationship, it starts with communication through words and through acts and deeds that we do with each other that creates relationship, and then that the next just slightly larger pool than relationship between two people is the community you're creating among people. And then through that community you create among people, it helps in so many different layers of life. I mean, we've talked about helping people be fed, be clothed, be housed, helping people in ways that, you know, quite honestly include helping them in business. Someone helping you with your cover lets you create a cover that's even more compelling, that gets you in front of more people, that has more people want to read the book, have more people want you to come be a speaker, that enlarges your community. It's like concentric rings to what's the next layer of community that you can be known by, can help shape the thinking of, and so on. And I think it's so vital for people as they're listening to this show. It's like, I sat in that room and I described who was in this room as leaders of businesses that are, you know, everything from a small personal design firm to multi-million-dollar companies. And one of the gentlemen there said, you know, one of the things I'm trying to do is figure out how I can get on the calendar with, and he named the vice president of one of the country's biggest entertainment companies. And I looked at him and I said, think about what would be different if your goal was, how do I build a relationship with that person in the coming year so that he takes my call, not how do I get on his calendar next Tuesday. Think about what changes when we shift the conversation to how do we use ourselves, our capabilities, our passions to build relationships. And you know, I want our listeners to know that we, as always, have created a short link that's in the show notes, and you can always go to bbdnow.com/kindness. That's going to take you directly to all of Rosalind's materials and so on, so that as Rosalind, as what you create in the world expands and you add it to the site, people will always be able to come there in order to find the information, find out how to have you as a speaker, as a teacher, as an inspirer, and so on. And, you know, when you look at what's coming next for yourself in the next 12 months, for instance, what is it that you'd like to be creating next in your world?
Well, that's such a good question, because I'm always focused on the here and the now, and I have this goal. I'm working with Clinton Swain out of Frontier Training, and he is the most I need a better vocabulary, awe-inspiring individual that takes a person to the next level. And when I enrolled in his program, it was over this last May, He said, I can see you've got great skill, you've got capacity, and I want to take you to the next level. My goal is to be on a stage speaking in front of 1,000 people. 1,000 people. And I go in small steps and small little hurdles. With this first book out, it's hard to believe that I'm going ahead and saying this. I'm so excited with the first book coming out that I want the next book. I want to have that next book out.
Perfect.
But it's, you know, chapter two, and I've got so many amazing ideas of what to go ahead and put in there. I want to take my business stages that are with different business organizations, with different service organizations. I want to get more in front of business leaders to help them with this message, to take them to the next level. I've worked with people in the hospitality industry. I've worked with people in the athletic industry. I've got some big things on the horizon working with Cal State Northridge with the advisory council. I'm going to be speaking to the basketball team at one of the local high schools I work at. I was at this event with LaDonna, and this other person is going to get me into the athletic league because it's this confidence and this shift of the mindset that everyone has regardless of the industry that we have. How do we get ourselves to accomplish our goals? And would be expanding and growing my business so it's not just the rifle operation, but I've got some people to help me out in this way and collaborating with other people and organizations, because that is really truly what it's all about. And I believe that everyone has a message in their heart that they need to get out to the world. And what I love about teaching in the college classroom is I've taught thousands and thousands of students how to take that message and make it work. In my capacity of working with TED, I've had the experience of taking experienced, highly skilled people from the top level and working with them, and I can help anybody in this audience who wants to put together a message to achieve the results and get that confidence to inspire and get the people to act. But they wake up every day and say, how can I do that better? And that's where I want to take my business in the next year, is building on the business sector, building on the college market of going out and talking to college students and high school students and tapping those two and bringing them together. Because I think it's not just one or the other. We've got to get tomorrow's leaders and the ones today to go ahead and kind of create a marriage and a symbiotic relationship to make these things work.
It's so true. And creating that symbiotic relationship, one of the elements that I find very precious and I speak about a great deal when I'm speaking to groups, be they business leaders or people inside organizations, is this idea of the multiplier effect. And so much of what you do, Roslyn, is the trigger point of the multiplier effect. Is person who is in one of your classes who expands their possibilities and builds their relationships is creating that rippling multiplier effect of their own influence in the world. And as you're speaking with organizations, as you yourself become a TED Talk speaker, that multiplier effect of the ideas into the new, fresh mindset of people of all ages, of all cultures, just has this capacity to create this really shift across the globe. And I'm it's such fun to celebrate my birthday talking with you about all of this, and anything I can do to help open new horizons for you, connect you with others, you know, it's going to be my delight, whether it's through this show and people who are listening to it. I know one of the gifts of the show is we know we have thousands of people who listen across the months to the show, so I'm excited for being able to create that ripple effect, and anything I can do to help you create this way you have of gifting others with taking their passion and indeed creating their own multiplier effect in the world is just, you know, something very precious to me and something I look forward to with helping you with.
Oh, thank you so much. Gratitude beyond words from the bottom of my heart. I'm glad that I can be your present to give to the world. I just can't put to words my appreciation and gratitude that I want to express to you for allowing me to be a guest and to share this information. And I, too, are willing to help you to expand your reach to other people that I know that you're going to be able to help take their businesses to the next level. And you've said so much in this show that is just really, really helpful information. So thank you to you. A happy birthday.
Thank you. And again, for all of our listeners, you'll always be able to reach Rosalind by going to bbdnow.com/kindness. And that link will always be in the show notes. And Rosalind, thank you so much. And wow, we're going to go out and create one heck of a day. Thank you.
We certainly are. I just want to just give one last piece of information. As we're talking on the show today, I know my information is on the webpage, but my book is available on Amazon.com. It's also available on Kindle. And if you just put in Random Acts of Kindness or Change in the World, you'll be able to click in and get a copy of that. And thank you again so very much.
Oh, it's my pleasure. Thank you so much for joining us today. Goodbye, everyone. We'll see you again next week.
Join us Tuesday at noon Eastern for the next episode of Breakthrough Directions, from relationship marketing to business success.